crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Hello and welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nachtigall. We're coming to you today, as per usual, from Jerusalem, Israel. Are we going to have a Saudi-Israeli peace pact similar to what Israel has with Egypt? Right now, we see quite a lot of stories coming out talking about how close the interests are aligning between Saudi Arabia, between Israel, because both nations are interested in countering Iran's rise. That's what I want to talk about on today's program. And then I'm going to go back and discuss that fateful peace pact between Israel and the Egyptians tomorrow, Monday being the anniversary of the speech of Egyptian President Anwar Sadat that he gave at the Israeli Knesset here in Jerusalem, which led to that peace pact which has underpinned Israel's defense for the past 40 years. But before we get to that, I'll cover that in the second section. I really want to discuss this important growth of a relationship between Israel, the Saudis, and also many of the other Arab states as well. This is a story from Reuters today. When I'm recording this, unfortunately, I don't have the results from this meeting. But right now, Saudi Arabia and other Arab foreign ministers are holding an emergency meeting in Cairo to discuss the confronting of Iran, as well as its Lebanese Shiite ally Hezbollah. And they're obviously saying these nations are coming together, saying that Iran is interfering in their internal affairs. And so at the behest of the Saudis, they have come together for this emergency meeting of the different Arab nations to discuss what to do about Iran. Now, this comes in the wake of the last couple of weeks of eventful weeks, where we had the Lebanese Prime Minister Saad Hariri resign from Saudi Arabia, talking about how much Iran has taken over Lebanon and how that he is not going to stand for it any longer. The Saudi foreign minister came out last week and said, enough is enough. We're sick of what you're doing in Syria, in Lebanon, in Yemen, just to Saudi Arabia's south. And so what we're seeing right now is this convergence of interests between a number of Arab states, as well as the Israelis, the Egyptians, and it seems some European nations as well, coming together to at least talk about what they can do to confront Iran's rise. And right, just even today, we had a phone call between the French President Macron and the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. They talked on the phone for about half an hour. And what were they discussing? They were discussing what to do about Iran, what to do about the Lebanon situation, the Lebanese situation right now. That call was not at the behest of the Israelis. That call was arranged by the French president, indicating that France may even be on side here, trying to figure out ways to counter what Iran is doing. So what I want to talk about right now is just this relationship with Saudi Arabia and Israel, and discuss what Bible prophecy has to say about it in light of the strengthening of this relationship. Of course, the state of Saudi Arabia, if you talk to their population, there is going to be quite a lot of animosity towards the Jewish state that still exists. And yet we have, as going back over the past, I would say, 2 or 3 years, a strengthening of ties, at least the security relationship between the two states. Though the people might object to this, the Saudis recognize Israel's military strength, its might. They recognize that Israel is an ally of mutual interest here because of the threat that Israel faces from Iranian proxies that have only got stronger through the last couple of years, through the Syrian civil war, the strengthening of Hezbollah, well, at least the increase in the training that Hezbollah soldiers have got. And Israel's, of course, worried about the Iranian proxies that are located right now in Syria and who intend to stay there. And so the Saudis and Israel are coming together to think about what they can do together to push back against Iran. Just this past Thursday, there was a Saudi newspaper that published an interview with Lieutenant General Gadi Eisenkot, and he is the chief of staff for Israel. And this was the first time that a senior member of the IDF has been interviewed by a media organization in Saudi Arabia, which still to this day doesn't have any diplomatic ties with Israel. But this was quite a step forward for the Saudis to come out and take this interview with an Israeli leader and to discuss Iran, basically, and what Saudis and Israel are willing to do together to counter that rise. I'd like to quote now from an article that appeared in the Times of Israel about this. This is what this article said. This is part this past Thursday. In the interview to the Saudi online newspaper Elaf, Eisenkot called Iran the, quote, real and largest threat to the region. He said that Israel and Saudi Arabia are in complete agreement about Iran's intentions. He also noted that Saudi Arabia, Israel, they've never fought each other. And then he said that Eisenkot said that Israel's military situation has never been better. He said that this is why it was highly regarded by the moderate countries in the region. And then he came out swinging against Iran, saying Iran seeks to take control of the Middle East, creating a Shia crescent from Lebanon to Iran, and then from the Persian Gulf to the Red Sea. Now, this is really interesting that he highlights these two tracks, Iranian tracks of strategy. One, to get this Shiite crescent from Iran across Iraq to Syria to Lebanon to link up its proxies. We've talked about in this program already how much that Iran controls Iraq, and that Iraq is basically lost to Iran at this point. Syria does, even though we've got a strong ally of the Iranians in power in Syria with Bashar al-Assad. Syria still could be safe for the Iranians, and we expect that to actually happen. Biblical prophecy indicates that is going to happen. But he noticed that Eisenkot also notices what else Iran is doing. Not just the Shia crescent from Lebanon to Iran, which a lot of news outlets are talking about. He also talks about how they want to create another crescent from the Persian Gulf to the Red Sea. And we've talked about this ever since the Iranian takeover, even before the Iranian takeover, the Houthi takeover in Yemen of the capital Sana'a back in 2014. We spoke about how that was Iran's strategy to dominate the waters from the Persian Gulf around the Saudi Peninsula up through the Red Sea, which Yemen's western coast borders the Red Sea, up into Egypt and the southern Mediterranean. And really, if you look what the Bible says about Iran's intentions, it is that strategy that they are actually going to be successful with, even though it seems like that is the more difficult strategy for Iran right now, given Iran's strength in Iraq, Syria, and its control of control of the Lebanese state through Hezbollah. Bible prophecy indicates, and we can give you things to read for this, and we will in the links to today's show. Bible prophecy indicates that Iran is going to lose out in Syria and Lebanon, which is another reason why we are watching so closely these developments with Lebanon, and how the Saudis are drawing the line with Lebanon, and the French are looking at the situation of Lebanon and drawing closer with the Saudis, understanding the history of Lebanon, it being a French colony previously. So the French have historic obligations to Lebanon. And the Bible does indicate that Iran is going to be pushed out of Lebanon. But that's not the subject mainly of today's program. We're talking about this relationship with Saudi Arabia and Israel, and to see whether it's going to go somewhere, to see whether it will result in maybe a peace treaty. Of course, it's probably too early to talk about that right now. But considering that it is the anniversary of that fateful speech in the Knesset by Sadat, and how important that speech was at paving the way for the peace pact between the Israelis and the Egyptians, we should really look at this growing relationship with the Saudis and ask the question, is the same thing going to happen as a result? And we'll talk about that in the second half of today's program quite a lot. This is what Essenkot said in the Saudi paper. He said, with President Trump, there is an opportunity to build a new international coalition in the region. We need to carry out a large and inclusive strategic plan to stop the Iranian danger. We are willing to exchange information with moderate Arab countries, including intelligence information, in order to deal with the Iranians. So he is stating there that we have many shared interests and we're willing to discuss with you our intelligence information, share that with you, which could be a danger in the long run. Nevertheless, this is something that is strengthening this relationship between the two countries for sure. Then he talks about what's happening in Syria and Lebanon. Again, this is in the Saudi paper. And reading this as a Saudi citizen, you would have to say, wow, Israel does look like it could be our ally in this fight against Iran. And they would be willing, at least in the short term, to definitely ally with Israel. This, again, is what he said about Syria. Our demand is for Hezbollah to leave Syria and for Iran and its militias to retreat from Syria. We have said openly and also quietly and secretly, too, that we will not accept Iranian consolidation in Syria in general and their concentration west of Damascus. West of Damascus. Then he says, we will not allow any Iranian presence. We have warned them against building factories or military bases, and we will not allow it. And so right now we do see the Iranians, the Turks, the Russians, and even the United States trying to negotiate some type of final settlement here in Syria. And the Israelis are saying that this final settlement that they discussed last week isn't good enough. It puts Iran too close to our borders. Then he says this, which I think is very interesting. Just take note of this. This, again, is the Israeli chief of staff in the Saudi paper. Quote, Hariri's move in resigning from Riyadh was surprising, but I see that Hezbollah has begun to feel financial pressure. They have run into serious problems with supplies. We also see a drop in support for Hezbollah, and there are also cracks in the public that supports Hezbollah, as well as demonstrations in Dahiya, which is the neighborhood of Beirut, a Shiite stronghold. That is something we haven't seen in the past. And so we have this situation with Lebanon developing where the Saudis are saying enough is enough, probably forced Hariri to resign, being that he is the face of the Sunni populace for such a long time, his father as well, Rafiq Hariri, before he was assassinated, murdered by Hezbollah back in the early 2000s. It looks like the Saudis kind of pressured him to resign to just make it plain before the world how much Iran has taken over Lebanon. And yet, they're not walking away. The initial response from the media and pundits was, or is still, that Saudi Arabia, they're leaving Lebanon. It looks like they're leaving for good. And yet, our analysis of this is that the Saudis aren't leaving Lebanon. They're going to be more and more invested in taking Lebanon away from Hezbollah, away from Iran. And whether they are the strongest power involved in taking it away, we know that Europe wants to get involved, or at least the French are looking to get involved. And we know that just to the south of the Lebanese border is the state of Israel. And so there is this mutual interest between all these parties, Saudis, Israelis, and the French, it seems right now, that is coming together to try and remove Iran from Lebanon. And guess what? The Bible says that is actually going to happen. The Bible says it is going to happen. Yet what we're asking today is that in the event that happens, or even in the lead up to it, Is this temporary alliance more between the Saudis and Israel more than that? Is it just temporary, or is it something that can really strengthen Israel's place in the Middle East? Well, Bible prophecy has a lot to say about that as well. When we come back, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to look at the beginning of the Israeli-Egyptian peace relationship, or when this peace pact was signed. And we will see if there's anything remotely close to what we're seeing with Saudi Arabia, whether it was a relationship or a peace pact that was born out of mutual interest or mutual self-interest, or whether it was born out of a genuine interest towards peace, just to actually have peace. We're going to take a short break. Don't go away.
This is Watch Jerusalem on KPCG.FM.
The prophet Daniel wrote about a future confrontation between a power in the north and the king of the south. We are now in the time when these two major powers are quickly rising. The king of the south is stirring up trouble even today. It is critical that you know the identity of this prophesied power. For more, request our booklet, King of the South. Visit thetrumpet.com and click the literature tab to select your free booklet.
This is Watch Jerusalem.
3 decades of war haunted both nations. Attacks, counterattacks, preemptive attacks had delivered little but blood of about 40,000 men in the process. One man said he would go to the end of the world for peace, and another outstretched his hand to guide him. What precipitated was a full, bright light in diplomatic history. Now, this is the beginning of an article we actually published last year on Watch Jerusalem, written by Kieran Underwood, one of our writers, and it discusses this history of this peace arrangement, or this peace pact that was signed by Egyptian President Anwar Sadat and Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin. It was one of the bright lights, as he says here, in diplomacy, in the history of diplomacy between two states. And it's very interesting. It's beginning. It actually has quite a lot to do with the very work of Watch Jerusalem and the founder of our work, Herbert W. Armstrong. And we can talk about that as well, since he was just heavily involved in this process of bringing these two leaders together back almost 40 years ago, to bring them together in a genuine effort towards world peace, something that would cost Sadat his life eventually. Now, Mr. Armstrong, he was intimately involved in this peace process, and yet it doesn't get much attention in this world. They follow Mr. Kissinger and what he was up to. But there was only so much that Mr. Armstrong could discuss, obviously, but he was leading or meeting with Menachem Begin. He was meeting with Anwar Sadat numerous times through the late 70s. To help them come to terms with this peace. Now, on November 9th, 1977, that is when Anwar Sadat dropped the peace bombshell when he told the Egyptian parliament that he was going to travel to Jerusalem to pursue peace negotiations with the Israelis. This wasn't even in his original notes. And yet, everyone, it seemed, in Egypt at that time, or at least those listening to him, they applauded. They applauded. Even Yasser Arafat, who was sitting in front. Now, the Egyptians, they love this outreach. They believe that the other Arabs had grown wealthy while the Egyptians had borne the burden of the 4 previous wars with Israel. And that had really affected Egypt economically, since they were the ones fighting against Israel, or leading the fight against Israel. But just the economic shortfall in Egypt wasn't the motivation behind Sadat's move. This was something that was deeply personal to him, that he realized that they should be able to dwell together next to each other, Arab and Jew, together without fighting one another. And that's why he wanted this peace deal. It wasn't because of what Egypt could get out of it. Of course, there were going to be benefits to a peace deal instead of war, warring all the time. That was a fact. But this was a genuine peace effort from his heart, as we will cover here in a bit. Well, this November 9 bombshell that rocked really the Arab world when he came public and said, I'm ready to go and travel to Jerusalem. This really did affect the Israelis. Israel quickly accepted this invitation, and Sadat was scheduled to speak to the Israeli Knesset in Jerusalem November 20th. Now, when he arrived, the rest of the Arab world was not happy about it. Syria declared a day of national mourning. Flags were flown at half-mast. In Iraq, celebrations of the Eid al-Adha, that fast, they were cancelled in protest. Libya withdrew its recognition of the Sadat government and severed diplomatic relations with Egypt for even saying that he was going to go there. Then Arab newspapers and broadcasting stations described Sadat as a traitor, a capitulator, a conniver with the enemy, and an agent of imperialism. Now, this is what Sadat said in that speech. He said, I have not consulted, as far as this decision is concerned, with any of my colleagues and brothers, the Arabs' heads of state, or the confrontation states. Then Sadat said near the beginning of his speech to the Knesset, he said, those of them who contacted me expressed their objection because the feeling of utter suspicion and absolute lack of confidence still surges in us all. So the rest of the Arab world was against this, totally against it. And yet, he said it was time to move forward. He said, today I tell you and declare it to the whole world that we accept to live with you in permanent peace based on justice. We do not want to encircle you or be encircled ourselves by destructive missiles ready for launching, nor by the shells of grudges and hatred. That's amazing. That an Arab leader would come to the Knesset and that he would say that, we want to live with you. We accept you side by side with us. We don't want to encircle you or be encircled by you. Now, Menachem Begin, he responded to this after that speech. He said, we must not permit memories of the past to stand in our way. He then said, I hope the day will come when Egyptian children will wave Israeli and Egyptian flags together, just as the Israeli children are waving both of these flags together in Jerusalem. And this is what happens. As you know, when a leader comes on an official state visit like this to Israel, the Route 1 is covered every 100 meters or so on the lampposts. You've got the Israeli flag with whatever flag of the other nation is, whatever the visiting nation is. And this is what happened for Egypt when Sadat came. And what he was saying here, Menachem Begin, is he can't wait for the time that this happens inside Egypt. And we are kind of still waiting for that. Now, while this speech took place in 1977, it would be a while before an actual peace pact would come together. Yet the groundwork was there. The motivation was right. It was there. And the two, Menachem Begin and Anwar Sadat, worked together to try and produce this peace deal. And it got pretty rough at times. Of course, they ended up going to Camp David in the United States. President Jimmy Carter started to help them negotiate this agreement. And there were points in these discussions where it got so heated that President Carter thought they'd forgot he was even there because they were so upset with one another. Nevertheless, eventually this peace treaty did come together and it was signed. And 40 years later, almost 40 years later, we have Israel not having to fight a war against Egypt. Because of this, because of really the efforts of one man, of course, the Israeli leadership are willing to negotiate peace terms with any nation that comes forward. And they have done since with the Jordanians. But for an Arab leader at the time, it was obvious to everyone that Sadat was making the greatest sacrifice here, and that it would even put his own life in jeopardy by doing this. Now, a little over 2 years after that agreement was drawn up, Mr. Armstrong, he took a trip to Jerusalem and Egypt. When Mr. Begin remembered that Mr. Armstrong had come to visit, he interrupted his meeting with government officials and drove an hour from Tel Aviv. He was in Tel Aviv at the time. And after Mr. Armstrong apologized for interrupting that meeting, Prime Minister Begin replied, "Mr. Armstrong, I would get out of bed at 2 in the morning to see you if necessary." That was the respect that Mr. Begin gave Mr. Armstrong. Then a few days or 8 days after that meeting with Mr. Begin, Mr. Armstrong flew out to meet with Anwar Sadat. This was the first flight since the Six-Day War to travel directly from Jerusalem to Cairo. It was Mr. Armstrong's jet. And then once arriving in Cairo, Mr. Armstrong gave a large, big speech before a number of officials in the Egyptian government. And then following that, he went to the presidential palace where he met with Anwar Sadat. And this is part of what he told him there.
"Mr. President, I want to say one thing right straight from the heart. I respect and admire you more than I can tell you. Because you have risked everything in an effort for peace. And your heart has to be in it, and it has to be genuine. And not many will do that. I meet heads of state all over the world, but I have not known one that would risk what you did of acquiring the enmity of the Arab world in order to have peace. Now that takes courage, and you have it."
Thank you, Reverend.
Now, just after those comments in that meeting, Mr. Sadat unveiled to Mr. Armstrong an architectural rendering of the World Peace Center. This was a brainchild of Mr. Sadat. It was going to be built at the very base of Mount Sinai in the Sinai Peninsula. It was going to have a mosque, a synagogue, a church, symbolizing cooperation between these religions and between the nations. And immediately, Mr. Armstrong backed the plan, whipped out his checkbook, gave him initial $100,000, and he pledged another million towards that structure. Now, Sadat told the press in Cairo that he saw the complex, or he wished to see the complex, as, quote, "a simple and as strong as he saw in the model, so that it would express the majesty and holiness of the mountain." That's what he wanted to construct at Mount Sinai, a World Peace Center. Now, the foundation stone of that structure was to be laid on November 19th, 1981, the third anniversary of his historic peace trip to Jerusalem. But that World Peace Center doesn't exist below Mount Sinai today. It never materialized. It was cut short because a month before that foundation stone was laid, President Sadat was killed. On October 6, 1981, he was attending a victory parade, a military parade. He refused a military escort, instead relying on lighter security. And as the Egyptian Air Force Mirage jets flew overhead, a group of Islamists led by one of Sadat's own lieutenants emerged from the artillery truck. President Sadat saluted, believing them to be part of the parade. The lieutenant threw 3 grenades while his associates mowed down the president with their AK-47s. That's what happened as the result of this overture towards peace, and that he wanted to construct this World Peace Center with a church there, with a mosque there, and yes, with a synagogue there as well. That's what he wanted to do. Now, obviously, this World Peace Center really does highlight that this was more to Sadat than just a relationship of mutual interest. An enemy of my enemy makes a friend. That is what could be said of what's happening right now with the Saudis and the Israelis. Bible prophecy indicates that that is, in fact, what's happening right now. if you want to read up about what the Bible says about these alliances that are growing in the Middle East right now, and especially what Iran is doing and what the Saudis are doing in relation to that, you can request our editor-in-chief's book, King of the South. You can also request his book, The Way of Peace Restored Momentarily. This details the history that we've covered today, Mr. Armstrong's part in it, between the Israelis and the Egyptians, and talks about how this was a genuine effort towards world peace, something that is so lacking in today's world. That's all we have time for today. You've been listening to Watch Jerusalem. If you'd like to send us some feedback, you can go ahead and do that by sending emails to letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. I'll do my very best to get back to you with them. You can also go to Facebook and type in Watch Jerusalem with a space in between, and that'll bring you to our Facebook page. Right now, we have about 2,960 followers on Facebook, so it'd be really nice to bump us over the line to 3,000 over the next day or so. Thanks very much for listening. You've been listening to Watch Jerusalem, where history and prophecy come alive.